This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The Arizona Cardinals site from the NFL Wire from USA Today. And as always, well, I was almost on the list, unless it's a special one of those preview shows. Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, is my co-host. And this is episode 321, and we are so close to the regular season. Now we are under 3 weeks. There was one preseason game left. In fact, our next show will be reacting to final cuts, because in 1 week from today, as we're recording on a Tuesday night, final roster cutdowns will happen next Tuesday, which makes the timing of this interesting, because part of the thing we're going to talk about in show is talk about our final 53 before they even play the final preseason game in timing terms. It's kind of fun. Seth, how are things?
Good, man. Just getting ready for the season, trying to figure out, you know, what the Cardinals are going to do and why they're even fielding a team for the preseason, it seems like, at times.
Right? This team seems banged up. At least, but they seem to be getting healthy now.
Yeah, and I'll say at least in that sense, why they feel the first team for preseason. Because, it, like you said, between the lack of excitement they seem to have for the preseason, and then the fact that, like you said, most of it is just the fact that most of these guys don't play.
It's made things interesting, to say the least. But we've got basically four topics we're covering in this show. Larry Fitzgerald suggested one thing about his future. We get J.J. Watt and Dennis Gardeck both off of PUP. We'll talk about what we took away from that preseason game against the Kansas City Chiefs, and we will give our predictions for the final 53. Obviously, it is a tad premature in terms of the fact that we still have the last preseason game. But that said, by the time the next show comes around, the final 53, well, at least the final 53 before waivers and everything, will already be established. So let's start with the news about Larry Fitzgerald, who still hasn't, quote unquote, officially said anything. However, his tune changed last week on his radio show with Jim Gray called Let's Go. And all offseason, his answer every single time is, I don't know. I haven't decided. I don't know. Is he going to play zero? I don't know. Last week on his radio show with Jim Gray called Let's Go on SiriusXM Radio, he said, when Jim Gray asked, are you going to be a radio broadcaster or a football player? He said, you know, just a radio broadcaster, because as of right now, I don't have the urge to play. He's talking about right now. It's the first news. So right now, he is retired-ish. He left the door open. He said, I don't know how I'll feel in September, October, November, but right now, the first time he's ever not felt the urge to play. Now, what was your reaction to that as it came out the day of the Cardinals' last preseason game last week?
You know, I think it's one of those things that you and I have discussed. I don't want to say it was obvious that it was coming, but it seemed kind of obvious that he just right now didn't have his heart in it. If anything, I mean, you and I can slightly pull back the curtain slightly and discuss that. I think there's probably some hurt feelings on his end that the typical $11 million contract and the wooing from the Arizona Cardinals did not persist, as you will. And instead, they kind of allegedly, we don't know for sure, allegedly made him a more of a realistic salary based on his play at this point offer. And so you do wonder if that played into the, well, I'm not going to play for that. And then it kind of, well, maybe I just don't want to play. Like, it's a lot easier to get motivated when you're talking about $11 million.
Right. And as, honestly, as bad as that sounds, Larry Fitzgerald has, in a large part, so he is an incredible businessman. That's Jim Trotter, when he commented the, it was a few weeks ago, when he talked to Fitz and he said, you know, Fitz tried to dodge the question, say, I'm not under contract. He goes, are you seeking one? He's like, I don't know. And talked about, you know, he's one of the best businessmen in the NFL. I don't want to make it sound like it's all about money, but the money factors into it.
Well, yeah, and don't, I mean, I think, I, for a second, let's be kind of honest and real. I think it's hard for fans to hear that about Larry. And
the guy has made so much money. Like, he is one of the few players that has had absolute leverage in almost every single contract negotiation he's ever had.
And until either this year or last year, and he still may be, I haven't looked lately, he was literally the highest paid player in NFL history that was not a quarterback.
Yeah.
And so, it, let the record state, it can never, ever, ever be said that the Arizona Cardinals didn't take care of Larry Fitzgerald. And so, you know, it was bound to happen. It was bound to come to this eventually. And I think more than anything, it's a difficult thing for fans and even Fitz to an extent to grasp right now. And in the same way, you know, he's trying to decide, do I want to play for $4 million?
Right.
Or whatever the money is. And do I want to put myself, I mean, cause that's the thing is, does he want to put himself through that much work to get ready to, cause that's the thing. If he comes back, he's not going to be happy being on the bench.
Right. That, so it is, and I've had this conversation a few times. It's not just the money. It's a combination of things. So, one, he's looking to win. So, first of all, he has to think that the Cardinals or another team, but he's always said that he's not going to play for another team. So, we'll just talk the Cardinals. He has to feel that the Cardinals are competitive enough to potentially be a playoff team. That's number one. Two, he's always felt that it would be time to go, or he wants to be able to perform at the level he expects to. And so it's a combination. Is he willing to put in the work that he knows he has to put into to play when he's going to have to play a lesser role than he ever has for less money than he ever has? And then the question is, does he feel he can continue to play at the highest level he expects? It's a threefold thing. And for me, some people view this as many people I've seen react to this on social media as saying, oh, he just wants to see if the Cardinals are good before he jumps back on. And he was, you know, he said himself in the same interview that while, one, yes, you seek a championship, but it isn't, he's just not looking for the trophy, because what's the value in it comes in the work. So you have to love the process, the competition. So you have to love the work to get the championship, because that's what makes the championship so rewarding. it isn't just, in his case, it's not just being part of a team that's a champion. It's being part of the championship, of being part of the reason where he, you know, his blood, sweat, and tears to go into the competitive process. You have to love that. And right now, it doesn't sound like he feels like, and the Kurt Warner said, this is what Kurt Warner said. I didn't want to put the amount of work that I knew it required to play at the level I expected myself to play.
Well, and I think the other thing is this, and I don't know if we've talked about this, so, you know, we can, if we weren't supposed to, you guys don't listen to this, but there was, we had heard a rumor that he was offered a contract by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And that he did mull it over, but in the end, they moved on to bring back Antonio Brown. So that kind of Antonio Brown contract allegedly was, you know, put towards him, towards Larry Fitzgerald as well. If that's true or not, you know, who knows? But it does go to what you're saying. It's not just simply about winning a Super Bowl. It's, there's a lot to it, and you do wonder if he's got the desire. And
that's exactly what he said. His body, he doesn't have the urge to be playing. Now, he might get that urge later. I don't view this at all. So I don't think this is as much he's leaving the door open just to, he's kind of judging the Cardinals and their competitiveness. Well, I don't think it's that at all. I think it is simply he isn't ready to say, I'm retiring.
Well, and that was what you and I talked about from the beginning, is that it always was about that for Fitz. It was about, and I'm, you know, I whenever you say this, you feel like people are going to be like, oh, you're just criticizing or blah, blah, blah. But no. But this is us being honest. The reality is he was deciding if he wanted to put that much time and energy back into football, right, and back into working out and back into getting into shape. Because again, he's not just going to come back and be an awful player to hang around and make $5 million or $4 million and potentially, you know, sit on the bench or play, you know, 15 to 20% of snaps to win a Super Bowl for the Bucks. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, take this for what you will, whether or not it's accurate or true. But if he was offered the Antonio Brown contract by the Bucks and decided not to play for the Super Bowl champion and favorite team to win the Super Bowl again, Tampa Bay Buccaneers,
and his buddy Tom Brady, and like, it's
right, like, it literally has nothing to do with the Arizona Cardinals,
right?
It has to do with Larry Fitzgerald
exactly
being like, I'm not there right now, I don't want to do this right now, leave me alone.
And there's also the thing, he's been very meticulous about controlling the narrative about his career. That he's been very good about that. He has said he does not want a lot of fanfare, as he loves his fame, but he doesn't love to be bigger than, like, he's proud of his personal achievements. He doesn't like talking about them because he plays it for a bigger reason. He is well aware of his legacy in terms of where he stands in NFL history, but he doesn't want to talk about that. He doesn't want to make a big deal about his retirement because, as what he said, the game is bigger than him, and he wants to keep it that way. And so I think all this is, and while it, in part, he just simply doesn't feel it right now. So he's being honest. He says, I don't feel like it right now. He's just kicking the can until, I don't feel like playing right now. Few months down the road, eventually people will stop asking and he'll just be retired. And I think that's kind of what he's doing. He doesn't want to make an announcement until finally people realized, oh, he is retired.
Well, and I think the other thing is, and we've, you know, talked about it, you and I have mentioned it before, but we see him similar to Tim Duncan, and Tim Duncan,
he's made that exact comparison.
Yeah. And he's just, you know, moved along in his life. And that's what we
very quietly became part of the Spurs coaching staff. You're like, wait, what?
Right. And, you know, I don't think Fitz will do that, but, you know, he may come back and be part of the front office in Arizona or something of that nature. But I, you know, that's where I think he's headed more now than anything. And maybe the fact that he hasn't filed paperwork tells me he is serious about that. He may play this year.
Well,
but
and here's the thing. He's a free agent. There's nothing he has to do unless he's a free agent.
Right.
He's a free agent. Now, obviously, there's one thing he needs to apply for to have his benefits start. But I mean, the guy,
he doesn't need the money
right. Because he's made $130 million in his career. He is making money in other ventures, and it's not like he's a good businessman. So he has a stockpile. He has stuff to live on. And so whatever, I'm not worried about this. As I've said before, the longer this went on was more about the less and less likely he was going to play. There was the hope that he came back just for the heart and soul of fans. But the Larry Fitzgerald we watched last year was not Larry Fitzgerald. It was, whether it was like there are diminishing skills. Yes. He dealt with body issues. He got banged up at the end. Like, it was bad enough. He missed the final game. Like, if this is the end, he missed the final day game of his career. He caught COVID. His role was diminished. Whether or not there was any sort of quiet conflict or unhappiness or dissatisfaction with his role in the offense under Cliff Kingsbury or how Kyler Murray handled things, other things that are whispers among there. It's simply, we weren't watching the same Larry Fitzgerald. We were just going to get moments, and that's it. And it's hard. Those get fewer and far between, and so it's time. And we want to see him play, but it was going to come to an end at some point.
Right, and that's, like you said, that's kind of where they are right now. And it's unfortunate, but it's also the reality of Father Time in the NFL. I mean, even though it's not probably going to happen this year, Tom Brady will eventually succumb to this as well. Now
he's a again, robot.
When when it happens, we don't know, but it will happen eventually. I mean, he might be 60, but it'll happen eventually.
I think Tom Brady might have been replacing parts with you know, futuristic, you know, Skynet type technology for. Yeah. Anyway, coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk a little bit about the return of J.J. Watt and Dennis Gardeck. What does it mean? When will we see them in action? That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Big news of the week. Actually, we knew it was coming. J.J. Watt himself said and during the preseason game that he would be back at practice on Monday, that he was going to come off of PUP, which... As we talked on a show a little while ago, magic. This was the perfect hide job, con job that the Cardinals did with J.J. Watt. I don't doubt that he had a hamstring tweak. He was always on the field, so there was a minor hamstring injury at that. And I said he wasn't going to come back until the practices weren't public or they were done with practice. So this week is the first week where their practices are only private. Guess what? Now we have no one has any tape of J.J. Watt at all in the Cardinals defense. They have kept his usage completely secret, completely under wraps. And they have, because he practices hard. I saw I saw from what I saw in the offseason when he went to OTAs and minicamp, he practices hard. And so he goes all out. We get the information where we hear that the goal is to have him play not the 90% of the snaps, but the 65% of the snaps, roughly, and let some of the younger guys like Zach Allen and Leckie Fotu get some snaps in the game. In addition to, I think this is all part of it. And so, oh, you have a minor hamstring issue that you had after the run test. We're putting you on PUP. This is all part of the plan, JJ. This is all part of the plan. We're going to get you ready. We're going to ease you into it. We're going to give you treatment, and we're going to ease you into so that you are fresh for the regular season, and that way you are as good in September as you are in January.
Correct. And, I mean, this was a bad, you know, con job from the beginning. I mean, really, we saw the videos of him running at the conditioning or whatever test they call it, you know, on the day before the first day of camp. And he was the first lineman in every run. And then all of a sudden he was like, oh, yeah, wait, I'm hurt my hamstring. Oh, I mean, here's the thing I'll say is if their defense comes out flat for 2 or 3 weeks and he struggles to get into a rhythm and you know, with the team, then this was another miscalculation by Cliff and company.
Well, and here's the thing. It sort of backfired on him because I'm sure in part was so that you could give those young guys a lot of reps. And what happened? And then, all of them got hurt again.
Yeah. So
you know, in the preseason, we have seen exactly one defensive lineman we know will be make the roster, and that's Leckie Fotu, and he played in one game. We haven't seen J.J. Watt. We haven't seen Jordan Films. We haven't seen Zach Allen. We haven't seen Rashard Lawrence. We haven't seen Corey Peters, who they re-signed. So we've seen a few snaps of Leckie Fotu, and that's it. Everyone else, you're like, they're not going to make the team. And so
yeah, exactly, and it's just interesting that this is where we are with the JJ Watt thing. But I mean, let's talk about Dennis Gardeck, because Watt was never going to practice in the open practices. Like you said, he's basically just been the defensive line coach or assistant defensive line coach. I don't want to take anything
and cheerleader.
Yeah. From Brinston. Cause Brinston works his butt off as a coach. So, but you know, he's out there basically doing the same thing.
Yeah. The Gardeck move, I'll be honest, surprised me because I didn't think that there would be a chance he'd be ready to go really till midseason. This says, and they've talked that he was ahead of schedule. I don't think he plays week one. It even sounded like Gardeck doesn't think that. But if he'd gone on PUP, that means he's out for the first 6 weeks. Doing it now complicates the final roster. But they do have a couple of options. If they don't think he's going to be ready week one, because with the IR rule, you can put him on after he's been on the final 53, and he's eligible to come back after 3 weeks. And so you do that. He could miss 3 weeks, or he's simply one of the inactives for the first game or two, and then he's back on the field. But I'll be honest, it was surprising, and it's going to be interesting to see how he comes back from that. Because I'll say this, as fun as he was, that was one of the flukiest years I've ever seen. And so it was unbelievable. Like, I don't want to say it wasn't real, but when you
there's
have
no
that,
way.
There's like, how do you replicate that? 93 defensive snaps, 7 sacks. Like, he got pressure on like 25% of his pass rushes. Now, granted, he had a specific role, and I think he would have that sort of role again. I think that's kind of niche where he has. But my goodness, I don't think there's any way for him to top what he did last year.
No, not at all. And that's the thing is, even when he does come back and has the same role, he's like you said, saying it's a fluke, it sounds bad. And that's not what we're saying, but what we're saying is it's an unsustainable clip. I mean, literally, if he sustained that that type of production and then played a full, not even, you know, 16 games, but say he just played 200 snaps. I mean, at 25% production,
he'd have 17 snaps in 17 sacks in 200 snaps.
Right. I mean, it's
absurd.
Right. It's implausible, basically. But that isn't to say if he gets 200 snaps, he can't have 5 to 7 sacks, which is still,
yeah.
I mean, 200 pass rushes. Chandler Jones, I think in his 19 sack year, had around 600. So, I mean, that's basically the same type of clip. So, but it'll be interesting how they use him. The one thing I do wonder is if they're going to put him immediately on the injured reserve, do you think?
That's my one thing. So I could see that happening.
But he has to make the initial 53.
Right, so he has to be on the final 53. Then you put him on IR, which then you have to wait
to return.
Right.
Yeah.
Then he could come back after 3 weeks. So it still could save a roster spot, but it's going to initially bump someone who could end up getting claimed elsewhere.
Right. And so that's the kind of bugaboo of it. And for anybody that's wondering, and you know, I don't know how many people actually care or pay attention, but you know, you've got the Jacksonville Jaguars who put Travis Etienne on season-ending IR today. We're recording on Tuesday, August 24th, and they put him on season-ending IR today. And my buddy asked, like, I thought they had to clear waivers and stuff. It's like, no, if they go on the season-ending now, it's fine. But you're basically saying they're not. Like, even if they get healthy in 5 weeks, they can't come back.
Correct.
They're done for the season. So the only option, and that's what Justin and I are kind of explaining, is if they were to put him on that IR designated to return, he has to make the initial 53-man roster, which means you bump somebody. Jess and I are going to go through who we have making the roster tonight. And with the guard deck thing, we're going to bump, you know, guys, and I'm sure there are going to be some disagreements among fans, but we're going to bump guys because we have to get to 53. And you, Dennis Gardeck, for better or worse, has to be on the roster unless you're just going to cut him. And I just don't see that happening.
Right. Especially, they used a second round tender on him for this year. They intend on having him. He's a stud on special teams. He's an emerging pass rusher. I don't know if he'll ever be a full-time pass rusher. Maybe I'm just being a doubter here. I'm not being a hater because I don't see how sustainable it is, especially with a player who's never really been a full-time player, to do that, especially at his size against the type of bend and length you have to use. Yeah, I don't know. Football, I could never do football stuff anyway, so...
Well, and that's the thing is, I mean, last thing on Gardeck, because we're kind of going long on it, but he's built like James Harrison. And so Harrison had this small window of, you know, high level defensive player of the year level production. And then he fell off, you know, big time. And that's the thing is, like, a guy like Gardeck being that size, those are the outliers that you can look at and say, oh, maybe he's can play like him. But James Harrison was one of the freakiest, you know, freaks of all time, in terms of
still is.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know if he could ever truly get there, but you know, you look at it and that's his size. And like you said, that there's very few players that have ever been built like that have produced at that level.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We come back to talk about that preseason game. against the Kansas City Chiefs. How much do we read into what happened? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And the Cardinals kind of like, well, the Cardinals lost to the Chiefs 17-10. But what was most notable was the start, because the starters on offense, okay, the offensive starters couldn't have done worse. Three drives, three and outs, negative one net yards. Kyler Murray completed one pass for 2 yards. He did have an 8-yard run. He was sacked twice. Well, one was he ran out of bounds
after
one of the most freaking most frustrating things about Kyler Murray from his rookie year. Like, what are you doing? Throw the ball away. But then he got sacked again, fumbled. It was just a deplorable offensive performance. The defense, on the other hand, did not allow the Chiefs to score a touchdown. It was, as someone says, it was bend and bend again, but then not break, because they held them to a field goal. Their red zone defense was good, held them to a field goal, then picked off Patrick Mahomes in the end zone, which was, it was a really nice play. Devon Kennard flushed. It was good about not letting him get away, containing him while flushing him out of the pocket. And then Mahomes tried to make a throw into the end zone that Byron Murphy made a beautiful interception, getting the toe tap down. It was good. So the defense was good, offense bad. Do you read anything into that offensive performance?
Not really. I mean, at this point, you look at it and you say the offensive line looks like they haven't played much together. I mean, I know they've been dealing with a lot of COVID along the offensive line. And Justin Pugh is the only, quote unquote starter missing, but it just seems like there's just no continuity right now. They didn't really show much of AJ Green. DeAndre Hopkins is still not out there. It just looks like they were trying to get out of there without any injuries at this point.
Well, I don't read too much into it. Obviously, you'd like to see some production, but I try to keep it in context. There was no DeAndre Hopkins. There was no Max Williams. There was no Justin Pugh. You had a guy named Sean Harlow, starting at left guard. You had Josh Jones at right guard instead of Justin Murray or Brian Winters. So you don't have your top receiver. You don't have your top tight end. You're missing your starting left guard, and you have a young and an experienced right guard. You don't game plan at all. So you're not scheming for the defense, and you're not showing all your offense. And on top of that, Christian Kirk drops a third down throw. So
Well, and James Conner, like on that third and two,
James Conner makes a bad read. He should have kept moving, yeah. Busted outside and pulled a Kenyon Drake.
Yeah, last season. I mean, you look at it exactly. You've got a drop that killed the drive. You've got a bad read on Conner's part that instead of just getting the first down,
and then you've got a miscommunication on another throw where Rondell Moore, looks like he pulls his bun. He's stopping in his own. He said, like, there was zone coverage. I was planting right there. Yeah. Well, on top of that, so of the receivers that are out there, so if you want on top of that, so you've got AJ Green, who's never played in this offense before. It was his first game. And then you've got a Rondell Moore rookie. So as much as you want to see the starters produce on offense, I don't know what more we could have expected. We should look at all those other contexts to it. I'm not worried because they're going to have the guys starting. I mean, there is a little, like, people are worried about the Cardinals' offensive scheme. They worry more than perhaps they should, but they do see what happened over the last 6-7 games of the season, and really, they wonder what's going to happen. And so there's questions, and when you see that, you're like, but that said, there was a lot to like from the defense, especially when they were playing basically nobody on the defensive line. Not to disrespect guys like Josh Morrow, Jack Crawford, or Marcus Hunt, but only Leckie Fotu is going to be on that team.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, again, it shows us that their defense doesn't look too bad right now, in the sense that, like you said, they're missing basically their entire defensive line, and yet they're still maintaining a good clip. They're creating, you know, pressures. They're able, you know, they didn't have Chandler Jones.
That too. Or Marcus Golden.
Or Marcus Golden. So they're missing their top two pass rushers. So basically their front five was without any starters. And they were still able to do enough to maintain against the, you know, best or second best offense in the NFL. Again, now we'll obviously give the caveat that the Chiefs are playing in preseason as well, so they're not doing a ton of scheming and stuff. But let's be honest, the Chiefs offense is better than the Cardinals. There's not any doubt about that, I would think. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I think you have to be excited to see, you know, basically guys that aren't even going to be on the roster along the defensive line, your second string guys along the edge rushing, and then your first string linebackers and defensive backs hold up against, you know, a reasonable facsimile of what the best offense in the NFL is going to look like.
Right. Right. And individually there were some things to like. Based on the depth chart on paper is always like 2 weeks behind the reality, at least what it shows on the field. One thing that I noticed in terms of reps, you know, Benjamin moved up to number three. Demetrius Harris moved up to the number three tight end, or in this case, it was number two tight end during the game because Max Williams was out. So those two guys made movement. They gave a lot of playing time to guys like Victor Dimukeji. They're one of their draft picks this year at outside linebacker.
And he didn't look bad at all.
No, he looked capable, which leads to, which we're going to talk about that. But you got to see Chris Streveler make plays again. Like, you see what happened last week. Like, he rallied them, scrapped, and got them to the win. Got them in position to tie and win the game, and then he got them within striking distance. And if the third team defense is able to make a stop, it could have put them in a position to have another rally at the end. And so I liked what we saw from Chris Streveler. Some of the back end receivers made a few plays. You got a really nice couple of plays from tight end Ross Travis. And so there were things to take away. You have to be thrilled with how the defense looked, and you have to worry about the offense. But if you think about it, then you're not too worried. You just don't like that. That's the only time that you're going to see basically the almost starters on offense, and that's what they looked like.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the most disheartening thing. But let's be worried, I guess, after Tennessee. And
especially because the Tennessee defense, not good.
Yeah, and to be frank, I probably wouldn't even be super worried after Tennessee, unless it's just unless it's a game that looks exactly like that for four quarters.
Right. And it's interesting to see what happens. I don't think we're going to see – it doesn't sound like we're going to see Kyler Murray this week. And if there are starters who play, then it will be starters who need work. So right. Young starters, not guys like Chandler Jones, not guys like Marcus Golden, not guys like who's been out, Jordan Phillips, if he's back from the COVID list, which I don't think he will be. And so it's not going to be those guys. It's going to be younger starters like Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins will probably be out there on the field. Jalen Thompson might see some time. I was a little bit worried when I after the game, I asked about Jalen Thompson's reps, and it turned out that they had three injured safeties. We knew about Chris Banjo. Then he had Deontay Thompson and James Wiggles all got banged up, and then Sean Williams got hurt at the end of the game. They had to throw Picasso Nelson, you know, the back of the roster's cornerback. They had him playing safe the last few plays because Sean Williams had to come out. So that competitive room, very depleted.
And that was something we worried about, you know, between all the names in there outside of Buddha, right? I mean, literally every name in there that we've talked about could make the roster and or be a guy on the roster. You know, Banjo, Sean Williams, both of the Thompson boys and then James Wiggins, they've all dealt with injuries.
Yep.
And so that was, you know, one of the concerns.
So let's move on from that and talk about what we want to spend the chunk of the show on, and that's our roster prediction. So coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We will give our projections for the final 53. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time to give our final 53. Obviously, we're not going to get it all right, but and if you've watched, if you looked on the Cards Wire, I've written one of these. I've done a projection basically each week. So after the first week of training camp, after the second week of training camp, after one preseason game, after two preseason games, and normally there's minor tweaks. Now I'm going to try my best to, we're both going to try and peg how they're going to, at least initially, build the roster. The initial 53 is, the initial final 53 is never the final 53, because there will be injury moves, there will be waiver claims, there might be trades. If you had to look at the guys on the roster, is there any or multiple people who you think could be possible trade opportunities?
You know, when you look at it, I don't think that there's a lot of trade candidates. I think that there's potentially two. And I got one on offense and one on defense. The first one on offense, I think we both would agree, would be Andy Isabella.
Yes. He's kind of redundant on this roster.
Yeah. And I just don't see where he, I think they'd like him to win that fourth receiver spot, I guess, fifth receiver spot.
It'd be the five. I don't think there's a chance he's going to be the four, because you've got Hop Green, Kirk, and then Rondell. He's going to be that fourth receiver.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess just looking at it, he would technically, I don't know what they would do if, let's say, Green gets hurt. Would they move Kirk out, or would they put Isabella in there? That's
Isabella's listed as the backup, the backup Z right now. But
yeah.
I don't know if that would be what they would do, because right. Well, especially since Cliff said Andy's better outside than inside.
Right, exactly. So, but when you look at it, Isabella on offense, he's really, you know, the only guy that makes sense from a can he play standpoint, unless they think they can get something for a veteran interior offensive lineman like Max Garcia or Brian Winters. And that would mean that they're comfortable with the young guys, Justin Murray and Josh Jones at the right guard position. And then that they like Michael Minette at the center position.
I think that one's is highly unlikely.
Yeah, and I was going to say, spoiler alert, you and I are going to show that we don't think that in a second. Defensively, Devon Kennard, maybe. Again, you go back to it. Right now, obviously, it's Chandler Jones, and then you've got
Marcus Golden.
Thank you, Chief. They just brought back Dennis Gardeck. We talked a little bit about how much they've played and liked Victor Dimakaji. They also have, all for whatever reason, they love Kylie Fitz. They, you know, he seems to be a guy that stays on that roster. And then if there's any semi-truth to the idea that they might drop Isaiah Simmons down to rush the passer every once in a while. It's, you know, it'll, it would make sense that they would try to get something from him if for him. And I mean, we're talking 6th, 7th round pick.
Yeah. Obviously. Jordan Hicks is another guy. Obviously he's put it out there that he wants to be traded. He could get interest, especially if there's any, like a guy like Josh Bynes, just got carted off the field. So there could be an opening. That said, I don't think that'd be a good move for the Cardinals because they already don't have depth. They already don't have experience with their starters in Zaven Collins and Isaiah Simmons. You take Jordan Hicks out of the mix, you have no experience after that. Tanner Vallejo has played, I think, 300 snaps, maybe 200 snaps his entire career on defense. Zeke Turner's just special teams.
And he gets hurt every time he does.
He does. And then Terrence Smith has a little bit of experience and Evan Weaver, he's not making the team. He's not making the team. He's not been good. So I could see that. Kennard, I think, is going to be tough because of his salary. But if there is a specific need somewhere, I think Andy Isabella is intriguing because you're not going to get anything other than a day three pick, but I think he might be able to draw something more than a 6th or 7th. You might get a 4th or a 5th for a guy like Andy because of the upside, because of the speed. A team would look at him and say, yeah, I could do something with that.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it just depends on what they think and what the Cardinals think. I mean, at this point, we're speculating, but also the way one guy has played this preseason and his capabilities in the return game, I think we both see a potential for him to make the roster, which would mean that they would have to shop Andy Isabella.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and start with the offensive side of the ball. I have the Cardinals only keeping 2 quarterbacks. I think it's because the roster, for me, this was a really difficult thing to do because there are some players that I think deserve to be on the Cardinals roster that they just don't have room for. And so I think it's just implausible to have Chris Streveler on the roster this year. They feel really good about Colt McCoy, and I think Streveler will ultimately be on the practice squad, but I don't see him because I haven't seen him do enough things like special teams or even gadgety type things where he's worth a spot of the roster or even being active on game day. So I have 2 quarterbacks. Do you have 2 quarterbacks?
No, I'm going to go with 3, and I think that what they're going to do is use Streveler as kind of the special teams running back, so to speak.
And so that allows me with 2 quarterbacks at Colt and Kyler to go with 4 running backs, Chase Edmonds, James Conner, Eno Benjamin, and Jonathan Ward. I think they will keep all 4 of those players on the roster as they did last year, only this year they will utilize all 4 of those players instead of last year where, you know, was a healthy scratch every year, every game. And it feels so. Since you kept 3 quarterbacks, are you keeping 4 running backs?
No, I'm going to go with 3 running backs. I think Ward gets the boot. So you have Edmonds, Connor, and Benjamin, with Ward likely going to the practice squad.
At receiver, I think it's completely I can't see them keeping less than 6 receivers, especially since they will use 10 personnel on their 2 minutes and other passing situations. But I can't see them keeping 7 receivers this time around because of the other position. So we know that the top 4 are a lock: DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, Christian Kirk, Rondale Moore. It's the guys behind them. And after hemming and hawing a little bit myself, I think Keyshawn Johnson maintains his spot on the roster and that it will be Andy Isabella ultimately. However, that last spot was really tough because I liked both Greg Dortch and Antoine Wesley because of the different things. So Andy Isabel can do return, but Greg Dortch has looked really good doing it. And the times he's had opportunities on the field, he's made plays. Kind of like what Pharaoh Cooper did a couple of years ago when he was with the team. Always been just a return guy, but his opportunities on the field, he made things happen. And Antoine Wesley's length is very intriguing, because if you need someone, say AJ Green goes down, then it gives you a different element in that wide receiver room that you don't have. AJ Green has length, Antoine Wesley has length, and he's looked good and when he's been healthy. But ultimately, I think it's going to be Andy. I think it's going to be Andy, and those two are potential practice squad guys. But I could, Wesley and Dortch were my bubble players that I could see being on the roster.
Yeah, and I go back and forth whether or not they're able to trade Isabella and then keep Dortch, or if they just go with the obvious six that you named and go from there. And I mean that in the sense of, like, those are the guys. I mean, those six guys are the obvious ones. It seems like Andy Isabella is basically a lock for the roster. But
that's kind of the chatter, especially since, you know, crack the door a little bit. A little comment by Cliff Kingsbury makes it sound like Cliff doesn't make final roster decision. That's a Steve Keim thing. And Steve Keim is dead set on Andy Isabella having something work with him, I think.
Correct. And that's, you know, that's what I would think as well. I think at this point it's going to be those six, but I think that they're going to try and move a receiver to get Dortch on. It's just, as we'll discuss, the other option would be to keep eight linemen, which, you know, with how the preseason and training camp has gone, I don't know if that would be the best idea.
Right. At tight end, I have them keeping three. The first, I think the top two are locks, Max Williams, Darrell Daniels. I think they're both absolute locks for the roster. The third one is interesting because at first I thought Ross Travis would be the guy, and then Demetrius Harris, when they signed him, he has far more experience. He has a lot of experience, and he moved up, like, while he was still behind on the written depth chart and the playing depth chart, his reps went to, since Darrell Daniels started and Max was out, Harris was the number two. I think ultimately Harris will be, if they keep three tight ends, will be that third tight end. And if they only keep two, I kind of wonder if Harris would be the guy or there as well. But I think they're going to go with three because I think they still will use two tight end sets, and Darrell Daniels also is a contributor on special teams.
Yeah, and you know, I go back and forth on the Harris versus Travis debate. I tight end three, let's be honest, it's a coin flip.
Right.
I'll say it's Travis just to have some difference, but it probably will be Harris because, like you said, he's got a little more experience. Here's the thing. I think both of them end up playing on the Cardinals active roster at some point during the season.
Absolutely. Offensive line, I don't think there's really nothing that I've done in all of my projections that suggests like they're going to keep more or less than nine linemen. There are nine linemen that I believe are locks. And so the difference is keeping a 10th lineman, which I believe would be Michael Minette. And from what we've seen from Michael Minette, he probably should not be in the roster. They like him. They like how smart he is. They like his approach. But that necessarily doesn't mean they want him on the 53. And I don't think he'll end up getting snatched up anywhere. And
not based on how he's played this preseason.
So we've got the starters. I've got DJ Humphries, Justin Pugh, Rodney Hudson at right guard. You've got your trio of Brian Winters, Justin Murray, Josh Jones, Kelvin Beachum. You've got Max Garcia, who is their backup center this year. And even though he looked really bad against the Cowboys, Josh Miles, I still think is a lock for the roster because he's their true backup left tackle. Josh Jones can be their backup right tackle slash maybe do some at guard. Justin Murray, if he isn't starting, can play guard and tackle, both guard spots. Brian Winters, if he comes on the off the bench, could play either guard spot. And Max is just going to be dedicated at center this year.
Yep, and I would agree with that, Nine. You know, I think the only thing you could see is if they start Winters with Jones and Murray as backups, you might be able to cut Josh Miles. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's the only way. But like you said, because Winters is basically only going to play guard, Garcia is only playing center. And so you can't just have Jones as your only backup tackle. But whereas if it's Justin Murray, like you said, he's played guard and tackle before. That's the only way I could see them keeping eight. I just don't think it's going
to
happen.
No, and you have to keep eight active on game day now. And so it would feel weird that they only have that many on the roster. Now, we go to the defensive side of the ball. The defensive line is interesting because I feel six spots are a lock. I don't think there's any way that this six is any different. The question is, do they keep a seventh? And so we know that just J.J. Watt's going to be on the roster, Rashard Lawrence, Jordan Phillips, Zach Allen, Leki Fotu, and with the signing of Corey Peters, obviously he was signed to make the roster. Those are the six I have. I don't think you can change it. I don't think there's any way to change that at all unless somebody unfortunately gets hurt. And right. As much as I like Michael Dogby, I do. I've liked him since he was drafted. I think he's just on the outside looking in. And if, you know, for his sake, I hope someone else claims him. But for Cardinals' sake, I hope that he can
make it to the practice,
squad and then get next year, maybe be the year that he can break through.
Right. Because we love Corey. We know Corey. We hope Corey's able to walk away on his own terms. And then Michael just kind of assumes that. That position.
It'd be fantastic.
Spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would agree with those six. I mean, like you said, there's really, unless they do something crazy at outside backer or inside backer and keep Dogby as the seventh, I just don't see it.
Yeah. And outside linebacker, Gardeck really threw a screwdriver, a corkscrew, you know, curveball, what do you want to call it, into a monkey wrench, into my roster, because I was always counting on him as being an exemption so I could add a player somewhere else that I want to keep. But now I think they keep five outside backers. Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, Devon Kennard. I think they're locks, obviously. Jones and Golden are locks. Kennard, his contract is fully guaranteed. Gardeck obviously takes a spot now. And I wondered for a while about Victor Dibakeji. But the amount of play on special teams and the fact that they gave him gobs of reps in the last game, and he looked okay. He did look okay. The first game, I was less impressed with. Last game, I liked him more. Some of the practices I saw didn't go well for him, especially in one-on-ones. I saw Josh Miles put him on the ground. But I think Dibakeji takes the Kylie Fitz spot. Gives you, I think, a slightly more athletic version who plays special teams, who has perhaps a little more upside on defense than Fitz.
Yeah, and I think Dibakeji is a more physical, kind of similar player to Marcus Golden. So I think he's a nice fit as you know, you said those five. So you got Jones, Golden, Kennard, Gardeck, and Dibakeji. Like you said, the reinstatement of Gardeck really threw everything off. I don't think anybody thought he would be brought back to, like we said at the beginning, make the original 53-man roster. But, I mean, at this point, he's a lock, you would feel like.
He has to be. So
either that or they're cutting him, yeah.
What? That'd be nonsense. So you have those same five. So basically our front – our defensive line or outside backers are identical. Is it going to be the same for the inside backers? I think there are only, like, there's one player that's a wild card in here, but I don't think he replaces anyone. I think there are five guys guaranteed to make this roster based on a lot of things. Obviously, Zayvon Collins makes the team. Isaiah Simmons makes the team. They're the starters. Jordan Hicks makes the team unless he's traded. Tanner Vallejo, he's going to make the team. The contract, he doesn't make a ton on the money, but there's a good chunk of his money that's guaranteed this year, basically locking him a spot. And plus, he's good on special teams. They like what he can do on defense. And Zeke Turner, special teams core player. They brought him back on a restricted free agent tender. You can't do anything else with those five. So it's a question, do you keep six inside backers, which seems about too many? And the other guy would be Terrence Smith, who also does stuff on special teams. But I just don't think there's room for him. Evan Weaver, he's not going to make the roster this year. He's a guy I loved that pick coming out of Cal. But he's not looked good. Like, his reputation, so we'll take it. He was a hitter, a tackle machine, and we saw a much smaller Jerick McKinnon on special teams stand him up. And then he got he got run over on another play as well on defense. And so Evan Weaver, I don't even know if he'll be a practice squad returner. I thought he would be part of the second cuts today, honestly.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I mean, these defensive picks until you get to the back end are really kind of obvious, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the hard part, is that this position, there's not a lot of movement you can have. Kind of like it comes down to the secondary, which is also kind of stacked. Talented players are going to get cut from this Cardinals defense because you can't keep 13 defensive backs on your team.
No, you can't. And so, you know, you look at the corners, the four obvious ones are Malcolm Butler, Byron Murphy, Robert Alford, and Marco Wilson. So the question becomes, do they keep Tay Gowan, their other six-round draft pick, or do they keep the veteran Darqueze Dennard? The reason we ask that is because when you look at it, you've got your five safeties, Jalen Thompson, Buda Baker, Chris Banjo, Charles Washington. Those are four locks, and I'm going to say that they keep James Wiggins right now. So that's five safeties, meaning they cut Deontay Thompson.
And Sean Williams.
But they keep the young safety. Then that's the question. Do you keep Tay Gowan or do you keep Darqueze Dennard? I'm going to say they keep Dennard. I'm gonna flop on on the rookie veteran thing. I think I could be off, and it could be reversed. I like Gowan, and I think he makes it to the practice squad.
I've been back and forth on this, but here's my take on the cornerback situation. They like having the veterans. However, Marco Wilson has been so good, both in practice and in the preseason games, that I think now you don't need to hedge by having another veteran on the roster. I've had Dennard or Worley in my last two projections, but now I'm saying no. I think ultimately Wilson's emergence makes Dennard expendable, in that they're going to go with the youth of Tay Gowan. Now, a little hint from what we saw, because the Cardinals on their social media released a no-fly zone kind of promo, and you know who the five guys that are heavily promoted? It would be Marco Wilson, Byron Murphy, Robert Alford, Malcolm Butler, and Tay Gowan. And they had one little flash of Darqueze Dennard, like a little, like just the moment. But Gowan was on there a couple of times, so I think they're going to keep another name to keep an eye on is Jace Whitaker. He's had moments in the preseason so far, but he's a guy that they like. And it's not necessarily for his play at cornerback, but they think they have some talent there to work with. He can play inside and out, which is intriguing, but it's also his play on special teams. Last year, he had the he was a practice squatter who was elevated, I think, 3 or 4 times to play. I think that's ultimately what he'll have, but he is a name to watch in there. So I have them keeping 5 cornerbacks, meaning Darquist Dennard gets bumped, Tay Gowan stays. I think today's that video on Twitter kind of swayed me the other way. And the emergence of Marco Wilson.
And I think that's a fair point. And, you know, I would keep Tay over Dennard.
You do have the potential there. And he can play special teams. He just hasn't had it. Interesting thing, Marco Wilson. So when you looked at the special teams starters over in the second preseason game, your starting gunners were Marco Wilson and Charles Washington, the punt gunners. We saw James Wiggins doing the same thing. And here's the thing. At safety, I bump one of your locks. I got Buda Baker. I've got Jalen Thompson. Those are starters. I got Chris Banjo. I think he's a lock. But I think it is the emergence of Marco Wilson and James Wiggins to be gunners. And so I have them keeping Sean Williams over Deontay Thompson and James Wiggins over Charles Washington. That position is the hardest one for me every single time because there are 7 players. Okay, Wiggins we're projecting is going to be a freak and will be awesome on special teams. There are 6 NFL players right there. Buda, JT, DT, Chris Bangel, Sean Williams, and Charles Washington. Whether they're playing special teams or they're playing on defense, those are our guys that deserve to be on an NFL roster.
James and have had success.
And they've had success. James Wiggins, I think, has done it. Like the athletic upside, the fact that he is a dog on special teams, they have seen him. We have seen him as a gunner. As long as he stays healthy, I think it's going to be the reason that Charles Washington's bumped. And they keep Williams over DT, which I thought when they signed Williams, I thought that was kind of the signal. And I thought there was also the Chris Banjo thing as well, because I thought they wanted someone who had a little more experience playing defense at a higher level with Jalen Thompson last year.
Because of the injury concerns that they've had.
So we both keep 10 defensive backs, but you keep Dennard, I keep Gowan, you keep Washington and I keep Williams.
Williams, yep.
And so that's how that goes. We will be able to take a look at obviously the specialists. They're like, we don't need to talk about Matt Prater's the kicker, Andy Lee is the punter, and Aaron Brood is the holder. Interesting move. Tyler Newsome, whom was, social media, like he was a freak with the punting. They cut him because Ryan Winslow, their camp punter a couple of years ago, made available. And so I thought that was kind of interesting that they, when Winslow became available, went for him instead of keeping Newsome, because I think one of those two will be on the practice squad at some point this year.
Yeah, and I mean that's the thing is people every year freak out about punters like replacing Andy Lee, but the reality is punting in the NFL is really hard, and when you have a guy that's consistent, even if he's 2 to 3 yards less than he has been, it's still really hard to find those guys.
It is. No, here's an insight forever. That would be perfect if Andy, like this for someone I know, there is a prospect in college who is from Gilbert, Arizona, went to high school with my son, who is now at Texas Tech, Austin McNamara. He was the best freshman punter in the nation. He was the best sophomore punter in the nation. If somehow he can... He's probably going to be the best junior punter. If Andy Lee can play one more year after this year, Austin McNamara here in Arizona would be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and but the crazy thing is, and you talk about it, I mean, we don't want to get into punters and kickers too much, but like, it's crazy to think about the best, punters, kickers that come out every year or that are the best, that win the Ray Guy Awards and things like that, and how often they don't do well in the pros.
Right.
And that's kind of the point with Andy Lee is every year you see people making that prediction, right? Like, oh, well, Tyler Newsome's been phenomenal. And you're like, okay, but Andy Lee is consistent. Like, so there's a reason Andy Lee's punted for 45 years.
Right. Absolutely. And with that, we come to an end of our roster prediction and this edition of the show. We will be back again next week because we'll get to react to the initial final 53. That's what's going to happen next week. We'll be on the show next week and be able to talk about the final roster, takeaways from the final preseason game, and kind of look ahead to the season. And then we're in the part now where we're doing a show a week up until after the season is over. So get ready for a ride. We're going to be talking. You're going to hear from us a lot. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.